every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to Seven Circles. I am your host, and my name is Autumn, and this is...
Dan. Still here, not special enough to die at 27.
This episode is a supernatural episode. Some of the things that have happened in this episode are true, and others are probably not. I say that because, I don't know, who really knows anything? Scientists?
Yeah?
Anyways... This is the story of the 27 Club. This is also a story of making deals with the devil. Are the two stories connected? Let us know what you think after you've listened to this.
Is this like the 27mm Club? Like the Chode Club? The club for dudes with tiny penises who strike deals with the devil to become longer than they are wide?
Is that a thing?
What, Chodes?
No, like a Chode Club.
Oh, I don't know, but I mean... If I had one, I'd probably want to be in a Chode Club, yeah.
Okay. Alright, let's get into this story. Robert Johnson was born on May 8th, 1911. His mother had 10 children before Robert was born, making him the 11th. One of Robert's many brothers began to teach him how to play guitar and the harmonica when he was in his early teens. Robert was not very good at guitar, but he just kept practicing anyway. Robert began to visit the local blues bars and attend shows. He was not talented enough to perform, but in between sets, the musicians would sometimes let him jam out on their guitars.
I tried to learn guitar. I don't get it. I have long, nimble fingers and I play sax, but most woodwind instruments' keys just go up and down, besides sharps and flats. And piano, for example, makes perfect sense. Guitars are weird, sharps and flats all over the place, everything shifts up a fretboard on, I think, the B string. It just makes no sense. I'm not a guitarist. Have you ever tried?
Yeah, I've tried to learn multiple times and have failed multiple times. The bass guitar, however, was pretty easy to pick up, but I did not continue learning.
Yeah, I bought a bass guitar when I failed at proper guitar. Still sucked, unfortunately. Anywho...
So, a famous blues guitarist called Son House said of Robert Johnson that he was terrible and sometimes the bar patrons would ask Robert to stop playing. I don't know why I did a Hank Hill voice, but that's what happened.
I liked it.
In 1931, Robert left his hometown of Greenwood, Mississippi and spent a year traveling around the South. Not many facts are known about what Robert got up to during that year, but we do know that before he left Greenwood, Robert sucked as a musician, but when he came home, he somehow had transformed into a guitar god. He started playing on the street corners for pennies. Soon, all the clubs and bars that he used to attend as a patron started booking him to play. And then he got noticed by a record producer, and then Robert Johnson just blew up.
And later on, he'd hang out a bunch with Karate Kid.
What?
In the movie Crossroads. That was the Karate Kid, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, fucking Macchio dude.
Ralph Macchio?
Who? Yeah, that guy.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. It's been a while since I saw the movie. I don't know if they hung out, but I mean, Robert Johnson was in the movie. Not Robert Johnson himself.
Okay.
But, you know, a dude playing him.
You had me very confused.
So Robert only participated in two recording sessions. He ended up only recording a total of 29 songs before he died. Most of his songs were released in 1937 and 38, with a few tracks being released after his death. Robert died on the 16th of August in 1938 in his home of Greenwood, Mississippi. When he died, nobody talked about it. Robert was pretty famous at the time of his death, and usually, even back in the olden times, when famous people died, it was all the news. Many producers and record companies went to Mississippi in search of Robert, but when they arrived, they found out that he had passed. "How did he die? He was so young and so full of potential," they asked. Nobody got a clear answer, though. Robert's death certificate states the time and date of his death, but no cause of death is listed on the document.
Was it because he was black?
I mean, maybe.
I don't know. I feel like if he was a famous white guitarist, then they would have gone to a lot more effort to figure out how he died and publicize it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's unknown.
It's a mystery.
Some say that Johnson was murdered by the jealous husband of one of Robert's fans. Allegedly, he was offered a bottle of whiskey from the woman, and it's said that her husband had poisoned it. It is said that he began to feel sick the evening after, and over the next 3 days, he steadily got worse, and then he died.
That sounds reasonable. What do we know of the fan's husband? Let me guess. He was white, and he was a cop.
That would make more sense, right? But no. The story goes that he was a jealous bar owner and tricked his wife into giving Robert some strychnine-laced whiskey. Some say that he died of syphilis. Some say that on the back of Robert's death certificate there is a handwritten scribble that says, complications due to syphilis.
Why doesn't somebody just look at it? Also, I don't think syphilis left untreated would have a deadly effect so soon, if at all. Just kind of makes you crazy after many years, doesn't it? Hey, maybe we should get checked out. Tune in next time to hear our results.
The exact location of Robert's grave is also unknown. There are 3 different markers in 3 different sites suggesting that he might be buried at one of them.
Or all of them. Maybe he died of leprosy.
Little pieces of Robert.
Very little, you know. He was in the 27 Club. Chode.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
So, according to legend, this is what happened to Robert Johnson in the year he was traveling when he all of a sudden had super guitar powers. Someone, who knows who that person was, told Robert to take his guitar to the crossroads near the Dockery Plantation. There, he met the devil, who took the guitar from Robert, tuned it, and played a few songs. The devil gave the guitar back to Robert, and this is when he offered the deal.
For your soul, you will have the thing that you want most in this mortal world.
And Robert just wanted to be a badass guitar player, so that's what he got.
I'd have chosen Immortal Guitar Hero, you know, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, now that we know the rules, I mean, he didn't know the rules. This shit was new back then.
Yeah, but you're getting granted a wish, right? It's just the age-old story. It's like Aladdin and the lamp, right? You gotta go into this thing smart. You can't just come out with some bullshit wish and hope for the best.
True story. Allegedly, jazz and blues producer Pete Welding had asked Son House, "Damn, how did Robert get so good? A year ago, he sucked balls."
This is in quotes, but I feel like it shouldn't be, Autumn.
Yeah, that might not have been verbatim. But this is when the story about the deal with the devil was first told. Sun told Pete that this was the reason for his rapid progress. The truth of the matter, though, might be this theory. There was a guy called Ike Zimmerman. This was Robert's mentor for that year he was gone. They say that Ike was the one that taught him all of his skills and that the two of them would practice in graveyards every night for a year.
Where else? Guitars sound their best when their wailing blue notes jump from gravestone to gravestone before meeting with your eardrums. But tell me, why are there all these likely nonsensical theories and legends when there is a perfectly plausible and altogether likely truth?
Well, Robert has a few songs that sort of help perpetuate the legend that he actually sold his soul. One of them is called Crossroads Blues. Go have a listen to that one and you tell me if you think it has anything to do with a demon, or if it's about something else.
I read it in the hopes to find some cool lyrics to talk about here, but I didn't get that impression at all. I think you could twist them to mean that if you really wanted to, but it's tenuous at best.
Yeah, if you listen to the song, you kind of get the feeling that, you know, maybe it was about that, but honestly, I think it was just about him being, like, he just needed a ride home.
Okay, yeah, so it was more of a vibe.
Yeah. So the other song is called Hellhound on My Trail. In this song, he talks about a hellhound that's out to get him. It talks about how his time is running out. You sprinkled hot foot powder all around my door. Could be a reference to keeping the evil out of his home. Hot Foot Powder is not what it sounds like. It's an African-American hoodoo magic component used to keep unwanted spirits or people away. You can actually buy a jar of it for $6.99 American dollars on a website called Art of the Root, and they even have instructions on how to use it, as well as the ingredients.
Hoodoo ya voodoo, bitch!
Whoa.
You remember that song?
No.
From the game Dead Island?
Mm-mm.
Classic. Anywho, according to Wikipedia, the repository of all that is known, hot foot powder typically consists of chili powder, salt, pepper, and chili flakes. Other ingredients, such as wasps' nests and sulfur, and graveyard dirt are sometimes added. It also shows some overlapping uses with goofer dust, which is also known to create restlessness and drive people away.
The fuck is goofer dust?
Well, let me tell you. That's goofer, not gopher. What is goofer dust? I already heard you ask. Also, in hoodoo magic, it can generally refer to any powder used to cast a spell, especially if harmful in nature, but specifically refers to a concoction of natural ingredients that can be used to cause harm, trouble, or even kill an enemy. Some historical sources suggest goofer dust can be synonymous with graveyard dirt. So, yeah. Don't piss me off or I'll put some goofer in your whiskey.
So, Robert Johnson died when he was 27 years old. The mystery around his death and his quick rise to fame gave birth to what is now called the 27 Club. You might have heard of it.
Yeah, at the very least, because we literally told you that's what this episode was about 10 minutes ago.
The 27 Club is a conspiracy theory centered around all of the famous artists that have died at the age of 27. Most of these artists died of controversial circumstances.
Controversial?
Controversial.
Let's get into the number itself to start with. If you study numerology, you will know that 2 plus 7 equals 9, and this means that 9 is the number 27's essence.
Of course.
The number 9 is concerned with helping humanity and pleasing people. This is what most artists strive for. They must please their audience to further gain more fame and popularity. The number 27 itself is idealistic, empathetic, and wise.
Okay. Let's just stress the fact that this ends in ology, and unlike its uses in more scientific, factual study, numerology should be thrown into the same pile as astrology and Scientology. Essentially, it's the bullshit of numbers. Number dumb fuckery. Numeric fairy tales.
If that's what you choose to believe, good sir, so be it.
I do.
Historically, the number 27 is known as the Trinity of Trinities because 3 is cubed root of 27, also 3 squared is 9, and 9 times 3 is 27.
And it can't be dead because we love it.
The earth is composed of water and the remaining land is 27%.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And in the Bible, the 27th book of Proverbs has 27 verses.
What an ingenious piece of writing. They'll be talking about this for years to come, thought Satan to himself as he unleashed the Bible on the world.
The planet Uranus has 27 moons, and elephants have 27 pairs of chromosomes.
Fuck my life. Is this going anywhere?
No, I'm just throwing out 27 facts about the number 27.
Thanks. Carry on.
Some people might be interested.
I'm more interested in Uranus.
God. Moving on. Robert Johnson was not the first artist to die at the age of 27. Before him, there were 3 others that we know of anyway. Alexander Levy was a composer, pianist, and conductor. He died in 1892 of unknown causes. Louis Chavon was a ragtime musician who died in 1908 of neurosyphilitic sclerosis.
That was definitely neurosyphilitic sclerosis.
Thank you. And there was Robert Brooke. He was a famous poet who died in 1915 of sepsis. Let's talk about our first known member of the 27 Club. Alexander Levy was actually a kick-ass composer. I listened to his Symphony in E Minor, which was composed in 1988. Nope.
I know. I was gonna ask.
1888.
That's the one.
Just 4 years before he died. Now, I don't know shit about classical music, but I appreciate the art and I enjoy the sound from time to time. Alexander was a Brazilian, but his parents were French and Swiss. His dad owned a publishing business in Brazil, so when Alexander began to write music as a teen, his dad would have his work published for him. I tried to do as much digging as possible about his death, but all I could come up with was, Alexander Levy suddenly died in Sao Paulo from ignored causes at the age of 27. This was quoted on a website called Last.fm.
Ignored? The fuck does that mean? Coroner's note.
Patient appears to have ingested every single key from his piano. Ignore. Patient was found hogtied wearing full clown makeup inside the blowhole of a beached whale with what can only be described as undoubtedly the single most enormous pineapple I've ever seen lodged 7 inches past the third rectal sphincter. Ignore also. Patient likely died of natural causes.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It really boggled my mind as well. As of this recording, there is a total of 63 known artists in the 27 Club. We are going to talk about a few of them now, and at the end of the podcast, we will list each member along with the date they died and cause of death.
You're lucky you're just marginally over the age of 27. Otherwise, this episode could have taken a dark twist as I made you number 64.
No. No.
Incidentally, according to numerology, this may have been very significant due to the number 64's many completely bullshit meanings and connotations.
Should we look them up and, like, tell everybody all about 64?
Please no.
Alright, to start with, the original frontman and founder of the Rolling Stones was called Lewis Brian Hopkin Jones. He went by his middle name, Brian.
I'd have gone with Hojo.
He was born on the 28th of February in 1942 and died in July 1969.
Not 1970?
No.
Not 1968?
No.
Okay, just checking.
Jones played many instruments and he could sing pretty well. He got together with his friends Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and he called their group the Rolling Stones. Shortly after he got the band together, Mick and Keith kind of just took over and took control, writing all of the songs and putting Mick in the front singing while Brian took a step back and became the rhythm guitarist. If you go to YouTube, you can see an old performance where Brian is on the side playing his teardrop guitar. Brian began to develop drug and alcohol problems, but I don't know which came first, his addiction problems or the band slowly booting him out.
Everybody just take a moment to imagine Mick Jagger slow motion drop kicking a guy.
But like young Mick Jagger.
I don't know that that makes a difference. It's still pretty fucking ludicrous.
So it's midnight on July 3rd in 1969. Brian is found at the bottom of a swimming pool. He was pulled out of the water and his girlfriend at the time, Anna Wolin, said that he still had a pulse.
Wait, we already did the necrophilia episode.
I don't think that's where she checked his pulse, Daniel.
Oh, okay, my bad.
By the time the ambulance arrived, though, Brian was dead. Nobody knows how he ended up at the bottom of the pool. His cause of death was death by misadventure.
Wait, what? Is that an actual recognized cause of death among medical professionals? Because if it is, I need to know the criteria so I can be sure to meet them when I die. In more recent years, I've wondered if I might rather be buried than burned. You know, just so I can give back a little to the earth. And if I do, I need my stone to say, live fast, died by misadventure.
Yeah, and I think they still use that to this day.
That's fucking rad.
There is a theory that he was murdered by a handyman called Frank Thorogood. Frank was hired to work on the estate that Brian lived at, and allegedly he killed Brian over some money that was owed to him. He was never tried for this, though, as there was zero evidence that Frank was even at the estate at the time of Brian's death.
Nice work, then, for a handyman. I'd like to find a hitman who can do some odd jobs for me around the house.
Next up, Jim Morrison was born on the 8th of December in 1943 and died on July 3rd in 1971, 2 years to the day after Brian Jones died. Jim was the lead vocalist of a rock band called The Doors.
Yeah, you know, he was that Jesus-looking dude. Not to be confused with Van Morrison or the Smiths frontman Morrissey. It's all very confusing.
He got so confused about the Morrisons and the Morrisseys, it was hilarious. So he founded The Doors in 1965, and they spent 2 years performing at bars and clubs before they were discovered.
They should have called Frank. Sounds like they could have used a handyman to fix their doors.
Ha! Ha! Once they were discovered, though, they got real famous real fast. Jim Morrison was very attractive.
Especially if you have a Jesus fetish, or if you like to go full exorcist with a crucifix.
First of all, he didn't look like Jesus. Like, Jesus was black.
I mean, fuck, that's a really good point. Sorry, American Jesus. I meant American Jesus.
His stage performance was dark, erratic, dramatic, and unpredictable. And the music was good. Their single, Light My Fire, spent 3 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 back in the summer of 1967. But by 1969, Jim's mental health started to decline and his drinking began to increase. And he put on a lot of weight.
Yeah, he needed some extra nails so he didn't fall off his cross.
Oh, Jesus. He's not Jesus. What?
American Jesus.
He also began to get in trouble with the law more frequently than not.
You're just perpetuating the Jesus thing now. Do you think he was, in fact, the second coming?
Giggity?
So, I just got really excited and googled at what age Jesus supposedly died at the end of his supposed existence, but it was 33, not 27. I was really hopeful that Jesus was like the first member of the 27 club.
Yeah, that would have been great, but no, it was 33.
Yeah, that would have been good though, because I mean, would he have signed a deal with the devil? Or would his fucking own father just have been like, nah, fuck you, you're dying at 27.
Oh, no.
Anyway, carry on.
Alright, so their concerts began to get cancelled because Jim was spending more time in jail than he was in rehearsal. On July 3rd, Jim was found dead in a bathtub in Paris at 6 a.m. The cause of death was listed as heart failure, and no autopsy was performed. Most of his friends think that he actually overdosed on heroin, but we will never know.
Maybe he was raped to death by a French groupie with a Jesus fetish.
Maybe it was me, and I found the time machine, and I time-traveled back then, and then I raped him to death.
Ooh, you like a bit of Jim Morrison, huh?
Yeah, he's very attractive. He's very cute.
Sexy American Jesus.
Yeah.
Next!
Jonathan Brandis was born on April 13th in 1976.
Why do you keep saying 19 with a British accent, man?
No!
1976, governor!
Pip pip! He died on November 12th in 2003. Jonathan was a child actor who started out as a model when he was very young and then ended up getting a role in an American daytime drama called One Life to Live when he was just 6 years old. In 1990, Jonathan played young Bill Denbrough in Stephen King's made-for-TV miniseries called It. I prefer his performance of Bill over the new kid.
I haven't seen the original in a very long time, but the kids in the recent movies were fucking exceptional. The second part was a travesty and seriously undermined those kids' work.
I agree. I really enjoy both of them, and they all of the kids did great, yes. Jonathan also starred as Bastian in The NeverEnding Story 2 that same year.
The sequel everybody wanted, but in retrospect, nobody needed.
I, of course, liked it.
But he wasn't Bastian. Bastian was Bastian.
Yeah, I mean, Bastian had brown hair and brown eyes, and they come out with this kid with blonde hair and blue eyes. He's supposed to be Bastian. It really confused me as well, but it was still good.
But what happened to Bastian Bastian? Did he die? He isn't in the 27 Club, right? So,
no.
Where did Bastian go?
He grew up and just became a lawyer or something. Who knows?
Was there that much time between the original and the sequel?
Like 10 years.
Really?
Yep.
When did this come out? Was NeverEnding Story 2?
The first one came out in like 81 and the second one came out in like 92.
The first one absolutely did not come out in 81. I was 1 year old in 81 and that movie did not come out. It might have been 91.
I mean, we can argue about it all day, but it's the first movie that I remember ever seeing as a child, and I was probably 3 years old when I saw it, and that was in 84.
Untrue. Right, we're going to take a quick Google break.
There will now be a short intermission. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves some snacks.
Okay, so it was 1984 like when the original... You said 1981.
And then I said I saw it when I was three in 1984.
An actual Bastion was Barrett Oliver, who, looking at his picture, I'm going to say was also the kid in Daryl. Do you remember that movie?
He was the kid in Daryl.
Yeah, the movie, but yeah. Is that Gene Hackman as well? The movie about the kid who was an android and he had a really wicked swing, fucking knocking those balls right out of the park.
Yeah, Daryl was awesome,
what
man.
What a fucking legend.
He was a badass.
Yeah. Okay. Anywho, he wasn't this fucking fool. He was real Bastion. But onwards about Jonathan Brandis. Who even cares about Brandis?
Shut the fuck up. It's my turn.
Oh, wait, he was your crush. Carry on.
His career was blowing up, and let me tell you that as a young me at that time, I was like 5 years younger than this kid, but for me, Jonathan Brandis was one of my first crushes.
Aww. Mine was Jennifer Connelly in Labyrinth. Also, prior to that, it was Wiley Kit from Thundercat. And before that even, it was Sunny Gummy, the yellow girl gummy bear from The Adventures of the Gummy Bears. Oh yeah, she was a fucking mischievous little slut.
Wow, so Thundercat and a gummy bear, huh? You had some furry shit going on.
I guess so. I mean, Wiley Kit wasn't furry.
I don't remember Thundercats very much. So in 1993, when I was 12 and he was 17, he got the role of Lucas in the TV series Sequest DSV.
What does DSV stand for?
Discovery? I don't know. That show was not very good, but I watched every damn episode because he was in it. So after Sequest was canceled, because it sucked, Jonathan was only able to land small roles here and there, and half of the shit he was barely in just flopped.
Unlike my penis when I used to watch the Gummy Bears.
Whoa. On November 11th, 2003, Jonathan was found hanging in the hallway of his Los Angeles apartment. He died at the hospital due to complications from the hanging. He did not leave a suicide note, but his friends think that he killed himself because his acting career was dead.
I've been told not to make fun of the dead, so I have nothing to say. Maybe you should have written him more love letters, Autumn. Maybe if you had, he wouldn't have killed himself.
That's actually a really good point. Yeah. Shit, it's my fault.
Yep, you murdered your childhood crush.
No!
Bastion!
Bastion! Next up.
Okay, so besides the Rolling Stones guy I'd never heard of, I'm going to throw some more well-known people at you from the 27 Club. Let's start with Kurt Cobain. You know, that very spirited teenager who shot to fame as frontman of the band Nirvana.
Spirited?
Teen.
But was he spirited, though? Oh, I get it. Okay, keep going.
Nirvana shot to fame with their second 1991 studio album entitled Smells Like Teen Spirit. There it is. Which, incidentally, I can never quite fathom. Do they mean semen? Is that what it smelled like? Anyway, no, just...
There was a deodorant called Teen Spirit.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, you gotta tell me about this now, go on.
It was just a deodorant that came out in the 90s called Teen Spirit, and it just made your BO, like, ramp up and smell just like, I don't know, I guess it like...
Like a grunger?
Yeah, I guess. It was pretty bad.
How did I not know that? Was this international or just in America?
I don't know.
My friends around the world and in the UK, if you knew of this deodorant and that it was this album's namesake, please comment on this podcast, because today I learned. Anyway, just 3 short years later, Cobain had had enough of this mortal coil and his wicked BO and said hello to his little friend, a shotgun. Reading about Kurt, I learned some perhaps entirely unrelated things I did not know. In interviews, he was seemingly repeatedly asked if he was gay. Not being a massive Nirvana fan and not being intimately familiar with their work or lyrics, I have no idea why this would have been suspected. However, his answers included, "If I wasn't attracted to Courtney, I'd be a bisexual," which makes no sense to me. Did Courtney have a penis?
Yes.
Also, yeah, probably. Also, "I'm definitely gay in spirit and I probably could be bisexual. but that he was more sexually attracted to women. Did you know anything about this, Autumn?
No, because I usually don't care about people's, like, whatever their sexual identities are. Not my business.
Nor do I. It was interesting to me because I've never been a massive Nirvana fan, but, you know, he's so in the limelight, and I was around at the time. Yeah. I figured I would have heard about
this. Yeah, in the early 90s, it was weird because, like, people were just starting to come out as gay and all that stuff, so it was just very weird for, like, anybody to ask him that question.
Yeah. Anyway, he described himself as being feminine in childhood and often wore dresses and other stereotypically feminine clothing. One of his personal journals states, "I'm not gay, although I wish I were, just to piss off homophobes."
Yeah.
Right on, Kurt.
Hell yeah. R.I.P. Next up.
Another that we probably don't need to go into too much detail about, American legendary not left-handed left-handed guitarist, Jimi Hendrix. Super famous, Woodstock legend, drank too much and took too many barbiturates one night and choked on his own puke, which I guess is marginally better than choking on somebody else's puke, but we're not here to kink shame.
That's all you gotta say about Jimmy?
I mean,
that's it?
That was a little brief. Go on, what have you got?
I don't know, man. I thought he was British for a really long time.
No, he moved there pretty early in his career.
I think he just picked up the accent because I've seen some interviews and he definitely talks with a British accent sometimes.
Oh, he did? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. But yeah, he spent a lot of his life over there, for sure. In fact, I think, from what I was told by an ex-girlfriend, I stayed in a hotel up in or near Whitby in the north of England, possibly Yorkshire. It's right on the coast, kind of on the edge of a cliff. And he was reported to have stayed there, but I tried to find it when I did the research and I couldn't find anything about that particular hotel, so it could just be that I was hoodwinked into going on this crappy vacation by being told that we'd be staying in a hotel that Jimi Hendrix had stayed in. I don't know, like, that would even matter to me. I don't give a crap about Jimi Hendrix. I mean, I, you know, cool
so
guy.
So you were tricked into staying at a hotel that you don't care about because you don't care about Jimi Hendrix, but somehow somebody fooled you into this?
Possibly. Unless, like I say, my research failed me, and in fact, actually, it was not a hotel that he stayed in. It was a house that he stayed in that has subsequently been turned into a hotel.
Okay.
But anyway, it really is not that interesting.
Nope.
So let's move on to Amy Winehouse. British singer, songwriter, and musician. Can't say I really cared for her much while alive, but I've since come to feel a little bit for her brief life. She hung out with some total dickholes, I mean real bags of shit, and got herself into some wicked drug addiction problems, just like Jimmy and Kurt, and then died of alcohol poisoning. She had a famous song called Rehab, in which she ironically sang, "They try to make me go to rehab, but I said no, no, no." The moral of that story is, go to fucking rehab, stupid! She also liked gingers. So, you know, she's all right.
Amy also suffered from bulimia, and it's said that her dad said at her death that if she hadn't have been so weak from the bulimia, she might have been able to survive the alcohol poisoning.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I know that she got very skinny at points, but I didn't realize that it was due to any unfortunate disease. Is that a disease? It's a condition, but I didn't realize that.
Also, her death certificate states that she died of, what was it? Death by misadventure?
I read it was alcohol poisoning, but I guess that would fall under misadventure.
Oh, maybe it wasn't her. Okay, moving on. Next up.
Anton Yelchin. Cool dude. American-Russian actor. I first noted him playing Chekhov in the newer Star Trek movies when he tried to give the bridge computer a command using Victor from the phonetic alphabet, but it couldn't understand him because he pronounced it Victor, Victor. Also, great performance as Odd Thomas, and he did a really good job of getting his arm almost hacked off in Green Room, among many other pretty decent movies. I was a big fan of Anton, so it was both sad and funny, can I say that?
Nope.
To hear that he got run over by his own truck when collecting his mail. His truck followed him, seemingly entirely silently like a ninja truck, and pinned him against his own mailbox, where he was reported to have died of blunt traumatic asphyxia. He was not found to be masturbating as he died, although again, we're not here to kink shame. Incidentally, Anton's model of Chrysler Grand Cherokee was recalled soon after due to issues with rollaway incidents, for which Anton's parents sued the high-quality car manufacturer.
Yeah, he was pretty much excellent in everything he was ever in.
Agreed. I really liked that guy a lot.
And he must have been making a lot of money. Why the fuck was he driving a Grand Cherokee anyways?
I know, I did think the same thing. It's like, oh man, I'm rich and famous, let me buy a fucking Chrysler. I mean, that to some extent might explain how he got ran over by his own car. R.I.P. Anton. Victor, Victor.
Next up.
Janis Joplin. Hippie singer chick. Played Woodstock with the aforementioned Jimi Hendrix, who, through my research, I have found looked just like my friend Anne. If you're listening, Anne, did he know you were Janis Joplin's doppelganger? Anywho, she's in both the Greatest Artists and Greatest Singers Halls of Fame, but unfortunately she enjoyed a little skag and OD'd on it at, you guessed it, the age of 27.
So my horrible Aunt Gina, fuck you, Gina, she loved Janis Joplin, and she would sing the Mercedes-Benz song so much as when I was a child that I know that song word for word many years later still.
Oh, that was Janis Joplin? Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, like we said earlier, you can get the list of all 63 members of the highly esteemed 27 Club on Wikipedia or any website you like, really, and we'll rattle them off later for you. But I have a couple of honourable mentions. Jean-Michel Basquiat, painter and graffiti artist and former of the band Grey. Never heard of this dude, but on August 12th, 1988, he did a speedball, so I'm just throwing him in the mix for dying really fucking happy.
Hell yeah, speedball!
Second one here actually isn't an honourable mention, it's a dishonourable mention. Jade Goody. This heinous bag of cunt was a contestant on the UK version of pretty much the mother of all reality shows, Big Brother. She became known for being slower than a one-legged Forrest Gump and being a racist bag of cunt, wonderfully being voted out of the Big Brother house when pitted against the very woman toward whom she had made her racist comments.
So was she just super racist to one person, or was she just racist in general?
I don't even remember. There was a thing after Big Brother where she was on her show and she said some other racist comment. I don't know. She was just a horrible fucking person.
So here at Seven Circles, we do not talk shit about dead people unless they were assholes.
Confirmed. Anyway, not too long after, the world was lucky to hear that she had terminal cervical cancer. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Even this disgusting excuse for a human. But, you know, all's well that ends well. I should add, though, that she tried really poorly to apologise for her behaviour as she was dying, and also, a couple of weeks before she kicked it, chose to get baptised. Way to hedge your bets, bitch.
She's like, I need to get into heaven.
Yeah, she was just fucking awful. But you know what the thing is? Back in the UK, there are a lot of people now who are like, oh, poor old Jade. It's like, no, she was a fucking cunt. Anyway, now she gets to live on, posthumously, as somebody who brought awareness to girls about cervical cancer, and as a memory that makes many of us grimace like we just shat ourselves.
Well, Jade, I hope your interview with St. Peter went well. So in the TV show Supernatural, there are quite a few episodes about summoning a devil at the crossroads.
Each one more original than the last.
They even tell you how to do it. So you go to the center of a crossroads, preferably a dirt or gravel road, because you have to dig a small hole in the very center of the crossroads. In the hole, you place a box. Inside the box, you must have a picture of yourself, a handful of graveyard dirt,
Goofer!
And a bone from a black cat. Once buried, the demon shows up and you can ask for anything you want. But the deal is always very short-lived and the demon ends up sending hellhounds after you to collect your soul.
People need to do better at making wishes, man. It's really not that tricky. Sure, there are caveats, but there are loopholes too.
Yeah, do better with your wishes, man. Like, be like, hey, I want to be famous for a long time.
Exactly.
So I went to YouTube and found a video created by You Are Here. They have 8,500 subscribers, so maybe their video on how to make a pact with the devil, step by step, is legit. So, okay, they got the instructions from a book called The Key of Solomon, and I have heard of this book. I do not own this book, but I am very aware of its existence. Here we go. So step one on how to summon a devil to make a pact. You must believe that this world was created by God.
Well, shit.
And this sounds weird, but it makes sense. You have to believe that God is going to protect you and hold that belief firmly in your mind. Well, without God, there can't be the devil, so it makes sense. Oh, and 12 hours before the ritual, you must sacrifice a rooster. There is blood involved, okay?
A rooster? Why a rooster?
I don't know. Step 2. Draw a circle of 1.5 meters on the floor of a dark room with the only light being that of candles.
The devil works in metric, huh? These instructions must have been written by an American.
What?
What do you mean, what? Americans hate the metric system, so they would obviously fucking attribute it to the devil.
Well, so the Key of Solomon was written by, like, a British person.
Was it, though?
Yes.
When?
In, like, 1400.
Okay. And who invented the imperial system?
Americans.
No. That would be the British.
That's what
inches,
I meant.
Feet, miles, yards, not in that order, of course, were invented by the British.
Okay.
Contrary to all you fucking Americans who keep coming up to me and taking the piss out of me for using the fucking metric system, we may use the metric system as well, but we use it alongside the imperial system, which we invented. So,
When you draw the circle, you can't just use a Sharpie for this. The mixture must be half ground coal and half ground copper. Inside the circle, you must draw 6 more circles, each one inside of the last. Step 3. Place a candle in the middle of the circles. Use a compass to get your bearings and place an animal feather at the south point of the circle, a piece of raw animal meat in the west, graveyard dirt.
Goofer!
Yes, a goofer in the east and a goat fetus at the north point. So step 4 is to recite the verse that is in the Key of Solomon, and I don't know what the verse is, and they refuse to say the verse in the video. Whatever, man. How the hell am I supposed to get a damn goat fetus anyways?
There are ways, Autumn. Just get the fucking book so we can summon the fucking demons. Maybe we could just use some voodoo shit like in Child's Play. Ade dui dambella, farantella santeria, give me the power I beg of you!
I don't think we can use voodoo, we're too white.
Chucky did it.
You see how that turned out for him.
Pretty well overall, that's one rich ass fucking doll now.
Okay, let's assume that everyone in the 27 Club sold their soul for fame, or their parents did it for them in some cases. I think the way to summon a demon from the show Supernatural is way easier than how they do it in the Key of Solomon.
Hold up. Surely even the devil wouldn't let you sell somebody else's soul for your own personal gains. A parent would need to sell their own soul in return for their child's success that they may reap the benefits. But then why would you? If you need to sell your own soul anyway, sell it for your own success. Fuck that sticky little bastard. It can fend for itself while you're out there living your best life with drugs and hookers galore. Until you're 27, that is. Then you die. But man, what a ride. Worth it.
That's an interesting point, Dan. I think it is possible to sell somebody else's soul by proxy. Like, say your child. So, like, Jonathan Brandis. Maybe his parents sold his soul. And they got a lot of money from him being a child actor. And then he died at 27 and they just kept all the money and probably invested it in Apple or something.
Bastion!
So, here is every member of the 27 Club.
Stick around. This will be marginally more interesting than a simple list. Maybe.
Alexander Levy died on January 17th, 1892. He was a composer, pianist, and conductor. Cause of death unknown.
Louis Chauvin died on March 26th, 1908. He was a ragtime musician. Died of neurosyphilitic sclerosis.
Rupert Brooke died April 23rd, 1915. He was a poet. Died of sepsis.
Robert Johnson died August 16th, 1938. Blues singer and musician, cause of death unknown.
Nat Jaffe.
Sure.
He was a swing jazz pianist. He died August 5th, 1945, of complications from high blood pressure.
Exciting. Jesse Belvin died February 6th, 1960. R&B singer, pianist, and songwriter, died in a traffic collision. Car.
Rudy Lewis was a vocalist of the Drifters. He died May 20th, 1964, of a drug overdose.
Shocking. Joe Henderson died October 24th, 1964, of a heart attack and was an R&B and gospel singer.
Malcolm Hell was the original member and lead guitarist of Spanky and Our Gang. He died October 30th, 1968, of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Why not? Dickie Pride, drug overdose, sleeping pills, rock and roll singer, March 26, 1969.
Brian Jones, the Rolling Stones founder, he drowned in a swimming pool in July of 1969.
Death by misadventure. Alan Blind Al Wilson died September 3rd, 1970, of a drug overdose, barbiturates, possible suicide, lead singer and primary composer of Canned Heat.
Canned Heat, that's a name. Jimi Hendrix died of asphyxiation.
On his own vomit.
In September 18th of 1970, you know who Jimi Hendrix is.
That dude. Janis Joplin died October 4th, 1970, drug overdose, skag, lead vocalist of stuff, hippie singer, chick, cool, lass, looks like Anne.
Arlister Dyke Christian, that's a whole ass name right there. He was fucking murdered.
He or she?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know either. I saw Dyke and in the nicest possible way I wondered.
Frontman.
Frontman, okay.
Frontman, vocalist, and bassist of Dyke and the Blazers, died in 1971.
Jim Morrison, July 3rd, 1971, heart failure, the Doors fella. Jesus!
Oh my god. Linda Jones, she was a soul singer who died in March 14th of 1972 from complications of diabetes.
Why do you keep saying people died in a day?
I don't know.
It's very strange, Autumn. Ron Pigpen McKernan. Pigpen? Big fella, I guess. Oh yeah, there you go. Gastrointestinal hemorrhage. Oh, associated with alcoholism. And curry. Died March 8th, 1973, founding member, keyboardist, and singer of The Grateful Dead. Oh, that guy!
Holy shit!
Oh, yeah, that guy that all our friends like, but we don't really care for. Yeah.
Okay. Roger Lee Durham was a singer and percussionist of a band called Bloodstone. He died July 27th, 1973, because he fell off of a horse and died from the injuries.
Just like Superman. Wallace Wally Yohn died August 12th, 1979. He was an organ player of Chase and died in a plane crash.
Dave Alexander was the bassist of a band called The Stooges. He died February 10th, 1975, of pulmonary edema.
He said it. First time. I'm so proud. Pete Ham. He was a keyboardist and guitarist. And what? Leader of Badfinger? What's the leader of Badfinger?
Just the fucking leader, man.
Leader of Badfinger, man. He died by suicide by hanging. I think I said it already, but here it is again. April 24th, 1975.
Gary Thane was a former bassist of Uriah Heep and the Keith Hartley Band. He died of a drug overdose of heroin December 8th, 1975.
Probably hanging out with Janis Joplin. Cecilia, that is all, just Cecilia, died in a traffic collision. She was a singer. Cecilia the singer on August 2nd, 1976. I need to know who the fuck Cecilia was.
Helmut Colleen.
Right, let's stop drinking more as we do this. It's only going to get funnier.
Helmut Colleen
was the bassist of the 1970s prog rock band called Triumvirate.
Poisoning, carbon monoxide.
On May 3rd, 1977.
Yeah, we don't want to miss out any details here. We don't want to be seen to be neglecting anyone who died.
No.
Chris Bell, that's Christabel, died on December 27th, 1978. Traffic collision, singer-songwriting guitarist of power pop band Big Star and solo stuff and things.
Xenon Defleur. Oh my god, I fucking love this name.
That's
so
a good
much.
Name.
That's a good name, Xenon Defleur. She, or he, was the guitarist of The Count Bishops, died March 17th, 1979, of a traffic collision and subsequent medical complications.
I'm seriously starting to doubt the fame of these people. I mean, I've never heard of any of these folks. Anywho, I'm sure they're all very important in their own right. At least as humans, anyway. D. Boone. December 22nd, 1985. Traffic collision in a van, guitarist and lead singer of punk band Minutemen.
Well, that's the punk guy I was telling you about.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I've never heard that band, so, I mean, I would have included him if I'd
cared.
Known or cared. Yeah.
Alexander Boshlachev.
Yep.
Died in February 17th, 1988. Fall from a height. Probable suicide. He was a poet, rock musician, and songwriter.
We got a jumper! So shall we start doing these into the accents now, just to liven it up a little bit? But see, now look, this name, I would just do it in an accent that would be seen as wholly rude and racist. Yeah, I'll give that a miss. Amar Singh Chamkila died on March 8th, 1988. He was murdered, and he was a singer-songwriter, musician, and composer.
I wonder who murdered him. Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Oh, and you took the piss out of me for trying to say it in 17 takes. Come on, man. Anyway, this guy.
He died August 12th, 1988 of a drug overdose. Oh, it's a speedball guy.
Speedball guy.
Yeah, he was the graffiti artist and formed the band called Grey.
Pete De Freitas, June 14th, 1989. He was the drummer of Echo and the Bunnymen. Traffic collision. Motorcycle.
Finbar Donnelly died in 1989, and he drowned. And he was the singer of Five Go Down to the Sea?
And apparently was not important enough for us to mention the date that he died on, just in 1989. That's good enough. That's all you get, Finbar. Chris Austin, March 16th, 1991. Plane crash. Country singer. You get what you get. And guitarist fiddle player for Reba McEntire. I've heard of her.
Yeah, she's pretty fucking important.
She is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Him, not so much.
Ah. Dimitar Voyev. He fucking died of cancer. That's sad.
That sucks.
On September 5th, 1992, he was a poet, founder of the Bulgarian new wave band called New Generation.
Yeah, he wasn't even a country singer, so yeah, the cancer's sad. Mia Zapata, July 7th, 1993, murdered. Lead singer of The Gits. So, I'm guessing probably British, but...
Yeah, it's a very British
accent. Who knows?
Don't worry, we're somewhere in the region of halfway through.
Kurt Cobain died April 5th, 1994, suicide by gunshot, or was it?
Nirvana guy. And it says April 5th, 1994, circa, so I guess the exact date of his death was not sure. I wonder how long it took them to find him. Anywho, Kristen Pfaff. Kristen Pfaff.
Okay. Pfaff. I just want to note here, we're not making fun of the dead people, we're just making fun of their names.
And in some cases how they died, but not really, it's very sad. They were all people after all. June 16th, 1994, drug overdose, skag. Bass guitarist of Hole and Janitor Joe.
Oh, shit.
Oh, Hole. It's the Hole person.
It's the Hole fucking bitch.
Wow.
Sorry, I don't like Hole. I don't like Courtney Love. She fucking killed Gorbo. She killed him. She killed Kurt Cobain. Anyways.
It's known. Everybody knows it.
So that's actually interesting that the... Oh, maybe she knew about Courtney and that's why she had a, air quotes, heroin overdose.
Actually, yeah. Looking at this list, which, in case you had not noticed, is in chronological order... Yeah, she died just a couple months after Kurt.
Holy fuck.
Holy fuck. We've uncovered it. Whole new episode.
Moving on.
Don't get sued.
Richie Edwards died February 1st, 1995. He disappeared near a common suicide site, later presumed dead, so they'd never found his body. But he was the lyricist and guitarist of Manic Street Preachers.
Do you know that band?
No.
You don't? They were kind of back in the Britpop days when you had Oasis and Blur and all those guys. They were one of the bigger players and... Pretty good, actually, as that kind of music goes. The Preachers were pretty decent.
Okay.
Not going to argue with those guys. Did not know about that fella's death. There you go. Stretch. Not Armstrong. Maybe Armstrong. I don't know. Just to Stretch. I've just seen the next three notes. Yeah, the next few are good. Stretch died on November 30th, 1995. He was murdered, and he was a rapper.
Fat Pat was...
Fat Pat.
Fat Pat was also murdered. He was an American rapper and member of Screwed Up Click. He died on February 3rd, 1998.
Freaky Tar.
These
rappers have amazing names. Freaky Tar was murdered on March 28th, 1999. He was a rapper and member of the hip-hop group Lost Boys.
With a Z.
With a Z, because they were rappers and they were cool.
Cammy was the drummer of Malice Mizer. They died June 21st, 1999, of a subarachnoid hemorrhage?
I don't know what that is, but it's
spider crawl in her brain?
I don't know. It's arachnoid, not arachnid, okay. But I'm still very scared.
I'm fucking scared.
I probably haven't disclosed this before, but I am very much an arachnophobe, and I don't even want to... Wait, look. We're reading this from Wikipedia, so we're just going to go ahead and click on this and see what a subarachnoid hemorrhage
there it
is.
Shut up. Oh, you have to click on it. It's right there.
Bleeding into the subarachnoid space, the area between the arachnoid membrane and the pia mater surrounding the brain. Okay, no spiders are involved, so that's a fucking good job.
Today we learned.
Rodrigo Bueno!
He's very good, Rodrigo.
June 24th, 2000. He was a cuarteto singer, and he died in a traffic collision in his motor vehicle.
Sean Patrick McCabe died of asphyxiation on August 28th, 2000. He was a lead singer of Ink and Dagger.
Maria Serrano Serrano, because one Serrano is never enough. November 24th, 2001, she was the background singer of Passion Fruit. Again, I question the fame of these people. Whoever Passion Fruit was, she was a very important backing singer, and she died in a plane crash. Crossair Flight 3597.
Rico Yan. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
He died March 29th, 2002. He was a Filipino actor of acute hemorrhagic pancreatitis.
Well said. And yeah, I know that I would definitely sell my soul to be a famous actor in the Philippines. Jonathan Brandis, November 12th, 2003. American actor, suicide by hanging. I feel like I know that name.
That's my dead boyfriend.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's that guy?
Yeah.
What? Fucking...
Bastion!
The second.
Bastion the second. Jeremy Ward died May 25th, 2003 of a drug overdose of heroin. He was... A member of the Mars Volta, and de facto, he was a sound manipulator.
Yeah, I don't know what that last bit is, but I know of the Mars Volta. Not a massive fan, but I mean, they were kind of interesting, I guess, if you're into that experimental kind of nonsense. Brian Ottosen. Ottosen?
Ottosen.
Ottosen! April 19th, 2005. Drug overdose, prescription medication. Guitarist of American Head Charge. That rubbish band.
Valentin Elzalde.
Close enough.
Was murdered on November 25th of 2006, and they were a Mexican banda singer.
Damien Damo Morris. He's got to be Australian, right? Hey, Damo!
Okay.
Anyway, he died on December 19th, 2007, of a traffic collision on a bus member of Australian deathcore band The Redshaw. R.I.P., Damo!
Wait a minute. I need more Australian deathcore in my life. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yes, let's look that up.
Yes.
Sorry to hear about your loss,
yeah.
Redshaw.
R.I.P.
Poor old Damo.
Orish Greensteed died of kidney failure April 20th, 2008. He was the founding member of the R&B group 702.
Lee Eon died August 21st, 2008 of a motorcycle accident. He was an actor and model.
Jane Goody died March 22nd, 2009 of
cervical... That bitch!
Oh, Jade. Oh, this bitch. Yeah, we don't even talk about her for it.
I mean, she was a reality television personality, you know, so again, fame, doubtful. Dash Snow. That's a good name.
That's a very good name.
I like to dash in the snow. I like snowboard, okay. So I like that name. July 13th, 2009, drug overdose, artist.
Amy Winehouse died of alcohol poisoning July 23rd, 2011. R.I.P. Amy.
Richard Turner, August 11th, 2011, cardiac arrest, trumpet player, collaborator with Friendly Fires.
Anton Yelchin died June 19th, 2016. His freaking truck ran over him. He was awesome. I'm so sad.
It didn't run over him, it ran more against him.
Pinned him against something, I don't know.
Pinned him against his mailbox. Accidental blunt traumatic asphyxia.
Sad.
Not for, you know, sexual purposes. Actor, Chekhov in the Star Trek reboot series. Victor. Thomas Fekete. How would you say that? I want to hear you say it.
Fekete.
Like the cheese.
Like feta.
Oh, cancer. He died of cancer. He is guitarist of Surfer Blood and died May 31st, 2016.
Kim Jong-hyun?
Wait, what? The dictator guy over in Korea?
No, he was a vocalist and lyricist of SHINee. He died of suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning in December 18th of 2017.
Interesting that they specified that it was suicide for him, because all the other ones that said carbon monoxide poisoning, I was like, well, okay, you got a hose pipe and sat in your car, but they didn't specify suicide. So, unusual that so many on this list would have died by accidental carbon monoxide poisoning. Anywho, Fredo Santana, he was an American rapper, and he died on January 19th, 2018, of cardiovascular disease and idiopathic epilepsy.
And lastly, we have Benjamin Kia.
Kio,
suicide by gunshot. He was Elvis Presley's grandson and son of Lisa Marie Presley and brother of Riley Keough. I don't know who Riley Keough is, but we all know who Elvis is. He died July 12th of 2020.
Well, there you have it. That was the list. We may or may not speed this up when we actually lay it down and publish it, just because it'll take less long and for comedic value, because I feel like this could be funny at double speed.
There's so much of you just, like, rambling, too, so there's that.
That does not sound like something I would do on.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, come support us on Patreon at Seven Circles Pod. Your donations and support can help us elevate the quality of our podcast, and it would mean so much to us.
This episode of Seven Circles was written by Auden Vale and Dan Griffiths. Seven Circles is produced by Auden Vale, with sound editing by Dan Griffiths as well.
Original music by Null Machine and art by Caroline Gates.
You can find us on social media, Facebook at Seven Circles Podcast, Insta at 7_circles_pod, and Twitter at 7circlespod.
Rhymes that keep their secrets will unfold behind the clouds, and there upon a rainbow is the answer to a never-ending
list of dead celebrities.
Never-ending story. Never-ending story.
List of dead folks.
Never-ending story. Whoa.